How would you like a 15% discount to my daily email, the stack of stuff, the show notes, discounts to the conference, all of that? All you need to do is text the word show to 33777. You'll get the annual subscription with a 15% discount to my daily email. You'll get the stack of stuff, the links to the show notes, discounts to the conference, and so much more. All you have to do is text the word show, S-H-O-W, to 33777. Text show to 33777.
Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, Hour 3.
Hello, America. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here across America. Today, the phone number is 877-973-7425 on this open line Friday. I'll get to your phone calls here in a moment. Got to bring you up to speed on a couple of things. First, breaking news outside the Trump. I encourage you not to watch the video. You don't want to watch this. A man has poured gasoline on himself and lit himself on fire and is melting to death outside the courthouse in New York. We don't know anything about why he did it or who he is. We have no idea. No apparent sign of protest ahead of time. He did it behind the cameras at CNN. We assume he wanted live television coverage. We can assume the man was crazy. We have no idea why he did what he did, but he if he's not dead yet, he's going to be. They struggled to get to him because of the police barricades, needed fire extinguishers to get to him. It's brutally graphic. I couldn't stomach watching too much of the video. You don't want to, but it has happened. Just remarkable. Other news that I got to bring you up to speed on is twofold. Joe Biden, and this is what frustrates me about so many people. The right now is it's like Charlie was saying, it's carnival barkers to the SEALs. They're throwing the fish at you as the SEALs. When you go art and clap, and you're not learning anything. You're not actually understanding what's going on. They're just telling you what you want to hear, so you clap at them and keep coming back for more. And it frustrates me so much. There is a perfect example of this right now. I have had callers to the program that they called to ask this question, and I've gotten emails from people sending me the story that Jose Ibarra, Lakin Riley's murderer, has been released from prison, according to the story, and it is not true. It is not true. He is in prison in Georgia right now. But a poorly written story from the Washington Times has provoked a bunch of online conservative influencers to claim that the Department of Homeland Security has released Jose Ibarra, Lakin Riley's murderer, from jail. It is not true. Alejandro Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, was being questioned by Josh Hawley in the U.S. Senate yesterday. Mayorkas said the reason Jose Ibarra was released by the Department of Homeland Security when he crossed into the country in 2022 was because the detention facility was overcrowded, he was deemed not a threat, and they let him go. What these hucksters and charlatans and frauds are doing today to get you enraged and whip you into a frenzy is they've selectively quoted him to make it sound like Jose Ibarra has been released overnight by Homeland Security. It's simply not true. Homeland Security has no control over Georgia's state laws. Georgia has imprisoned the man and charged him with murder. He's still in prison. I'm so mad at my own side about this sort of stuff, because this level of dishonesty is beneath people on the right, and yet they're doing it because they want clicks. They want clout. They don't care that they're lying to you, and they may not even know it. They should know it. They should do a better job. But they just want clicks. They want clout. They want fame. They want fortune, and you being angry drive them to it. There are times you need to be angry. But I just think this perpetual state of keeping people mad at the world is nonsensical. There are times for it, though. And one of those times is one of the policies the Biden administration has decided to deploy right now, which I think is a horrible idea that is, again, it's why we need to win the election in November. And we're not going to do it by being crazy. Joe Biden has just limited oil drilling across 13 million acres of Alaskan Arctic. For perspective, it's about 10% of the total land owned by the United States. Future oil and gas drilling will be limited across more than 13 million acres of the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, the nation's largest expanse of public land under a sweeping Biden administration plan aimed at protecting sensitive ecosystems and wildlife. The Interior Department's final rule represents one of President Biden's most significant steps to curb fossil fuel development on federal land. It could help the president's reelection campaign court young voters, a key Democratic constituency, after many youth climate activists criticized the administration's approval of a massive drilling project on Alaska's North Slope last year. In a separate move, the Interior Department announced Friday it will block a controversial road crucial to operating a planned copper and zinc mine in northern Alaska, saying it would threaten indigenous communities and fragment wildlife habitat. Together, the two decisions are aimed at safeguarding some of Alaska's last wild places from development. This is crazy. You know, a lot of the oil and gas companies, they've already got their leases and permissions, and what Biden is doing is essentially retroactively prohibiting them from doing their drilling. It's not going to impact ConocoPhillips, which has already begun development, but other oil and gas companies, it is. And they permitted and agreed to the copper and zinc mine. And now they're saying you can have the mine, but you can't have the road to carry this stuff out. It is disruptive to the economy. And by the way, at a time where we need to be less dependent on China for metals, it makes us more dependent on China and third world countries for copper and zinc. We could supply our needs and meet our needs ourselves, but Biden is undermining our national security to placate the crazies in the climate change community to try to get their votes for November. At the same time, the Biden administration has decided to alter Title IX guidance. In a pretty significant move, the Biden administration has decided to re-alter its interpretation of Title IX to say that sex in Title IX, references to sex, actually means gender identity. Remember, it used to be that sex and gender were different things, but now he's treating gender identity as sex and saying that if a man identifies as a woman, that man is eligible under Title IX to things that benefit women in sports. So men can use women's locker rooms, men are now eligible for women's scholarships, and men are now eligible to play on women's sports teams. And if you prohibit it, you will be denied federal funding. It's a massive reinterpretation of Title IX by unelected bureaucrats done at the behest of Joe Biden. This is why elections matter, and it's why we got to win in November. It's why we got to stop this nonsense. It's why we've got to roll it back. Also, I think that this is one of those things that continues to hurt the Democrats with working class and middle-class voters. You know, Hispanic and black voters are demographically the groups least down with transgenderism. And telling a black mom that your daughter has to compete against a boy for a women's scholarship is not going to help you win that mom's vote. Telling a man that your daughter has to see men's body parts in their locker room, it's not going to help you with the dads. It placates the wokes. It placates a small number of people who are deep pockets to fund Joe Biden's campaign. That's all it does. It placates the Catherine Mayers of the world at NPR and nobody else. But they're playing to build a coalition of crazy to get Joe Biden elected. And they're hoping that people on the right out-crazy them and turn people off. We cannot afford to out-crazy the left, and there are too many people on the right who want to out-crazy them, who want to steer you to craziness so that you no longer relate to the middle class and the working class and the stay-at-home moms and the suburban families, that you go on your tirades about nonsense in Washington and speak in ways that nobody understands of the way the wokes do. You are catechized by those with whom you surround yourself. Do not be catechized by the grifters online and on radio. So frustrating. All right. I promised phones in this segment. I'm going to go to phones. JT, you're going to be up next. Welcome to the show. How are you, JT?
Good afternoon, Eric. How are you?
Great.
Yeah, Eric, I guess you and I both, I mean, I'm fired up today. I was listening to another, you know, conservative radio host that I usually listen to before I listen to you, and it's about the protesters, the pro-Hamas and pro-Palestinian. It's like, I don't know, Eric, where are the parents of these young college students at? You don't hear from them. I mean,
no, you don't. Those helicopter parents, you never hear from them.
I mean, you're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for them to be indoctrinated and influenced, and they're turned into little radical terrorists and socialists. And it's like, I think Josh Hawley said the other day, you know, with them blocking bridges and everything, I don't know, Eric, mow them down. Not to be violent, but that's just, hey, you move
Look,
or lose it.
I think if you're blocking a bridge and someone throws you off the bridge because you're blocking their traffic, that person should not go to jail or be sued because you blocked their way to work and you essentially forcibly detained them by blocking the traffic. And I think if you get the traffic moving fast enough and accidents happen, well, you're the idiot who got out in the middle of fast-moving traffic to try to block them for the Palestinian cause. Accidents happen, buddy. There should be liability protection for this. Now, to your point, where are the parents? Let's be real honest here. In a lot of these colleges, the parents are upper income, elite liberals anyway, and they sent their kids to college not for an education, but for networking. Many of these Ivy League kids, I experienced this in my professional career where I was on television against people who went to Harvard and Columbia and Yale and Dartmouth and the like. And I thought, oh my gosh, they're going to be so much smarter. They were blithering idiots, these people. They had a privileged educational existence where they got to network and be in the clubs and the secret societies to get their doors open to be able to get jobs, but they're profoundly idiotic people. I continue to believe you take anybody in the SEC or the ACC, and they're going to outwork and outperform a lot of the Ivy League kids. The only difference between the ACC and the SEC kids and even the Big Ten and the Pac-10 and all that with the Ivy League is that the Ivy League kids know the people in the corridors of power that they've networked with to get a cushy job, and everybody else has to actually work for a living. And I would rather take the kid who went to an SEC school or an ACC school or a state school somewhere than a kid in the Ivy League, because the kid in the Ivy League was pampered and privileged and had access to people but did not give access to their mind except to the indoctrinators. The kids who go to the SEC and the ACC, to the state schools around the country, they had to work. They had to earn their degree. They had to earn their way into the door because it wasn't a who daddy knows situation. It was a what they could do situation. And those are the future of America. These Ivy League terrorist-supporting kids are not the future of America. I do not want them on my payroll. I would not hire one of them. Don't give a hoot in hell for someone who got an Ivy League degree. I know some of them, and they're wonderful people. I know some who teach there, and they're good conservative people. And the difference between them and the others is that these kids got in on their hard work and were given scholarships, not because mommy and daddy were third generation and they got to go. And they themselves have an abiding hatred of the Ivy League because of the contempt these Ivy League progressive idiots showed them, because they got there on their own merit, not on mommy and daddy's connections. It's offensive to me. And honestly, it's why I'm more and more in favor of taxing the endowments of the Ivy League. Begin to break that up. Get rid of the student loan program so that kids can't get student loans. They got to work to go to college. That'll bring down the price of college and tax those endowments. Shut down the Ivy League. These schools began as seminaries. All the Ivy League's colleges, they began as seminaries for religious institutions, and they are ending their lives as seminaries for institutions. They were seminaries for the Presbyterians or the Anglicans or the Methodists, and now they're all seminaries for the terrorist segment of Boko Haram. Hello there. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson, 877-973-7425. Let's go to Chad. You're up next. Welcome.
Hey, Eric. Longtime fan. I've always wondered a question, especially when McCain was running. There's a movie out there from the 80s called Brewster's Millions. You ever heard of it?
I love that movie with Richard Pryor, yeah.
Yeah. He did a campaign for none of the above. Well, what if we were to do that with Trump and Biden? Everybody votes none of the above.
Okay. All right. Do you know a guy in Texas has legally changed his name to none of the above and gotten himself on the ballot in at least Texas, but I think a couple other states as well.
Oh, that's what your call screener meant.
Yeah. Some guy literally changed his name to none of the above and is trying to get his name on the ballot. That guy may win. I mean, it really is remarkable to see what's going on, the level of contempt with people. You know, I'd like even here, I did an event with listeners in Jacksonville on Tuesday night at WKV, did one with WDBO last night here in Orlando. And the number of people who come up and say, look, I'm going to vote for in every single one of them was Trump. But my gosh, I'm not enthusiastic about either one. I just feel like I got to. I wish there was someone better. I think there are also a lot of people out there who are going to say, you know, I don't know that I'm going to pull the trigger. Maybe I'm going to sit it out. Or I just think you're going to see some people who think the only way I can register my disgust with both parties is to not vote on that line. And maybe everyone sees how many of us refuse to vote and there'll be a wake up call. Your choice whether you do that or not. I do think that some people are going to do that. And I mean, then you see the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world get elevated into positions of clout within the GOP, and you wonder what the heck is going on. How did the Republicans get as many crazies as the Democrats? That we used to laugh at them for having Cynthia McKinney and the like of, and then AOC and the Squad, and now suddenly the GOP has Marjorie Taylor Greene. And by the way, they'll leave her alone. I think some of them are trying to lure her to run for the Senate, where they know she'll be beat. I think she can stay in the House forever. Her district up in Rome, Georgia, is the heart of her district. They love her up there. You drive up there, everybody puts signs in the yards for her that they like that she's a rabble rouser. I will tell you, I talk to small businessmen in her district all the time, and they get so frustrated with her because they think the constituent service out of her office is terrible. They got to go to Barry Loudermilk or other Republicans if they need help from Congress, because they just don't think her constituent service is great. But as long as she performs for the people and gives them entertainment, they'll keep getting her elected. The question is what the rest of the GOP does. Do they elevate her? It's the media elevates her. Notice how the media tries very hard not to elevate people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez very much, or others, but they love to elevate people like Marjorie Taylor Greene to define the whole of the GOP. And nobody in the GOP does anything about it. All right. We got to move on. Before we do, Hillsdale College, let me tell you about Imprimis. I've been reading it since I was in law school. It is completely free. I have never paid a penny for Imprimis, and neither will you. It's part of the education mission of Hillsdale College that you can subscribe to. Eric, E-R-I-C-K, ericforhillsdale.com. You go to ericforhillsdale.com, put in your contact info. They will start mailing it to you every month. It is the leading conservative thoughts from the leading conservative thought leaders in the country delivered to your mailbox every month. Heather McDonald, Chris Rufo, Larry Arnn, so many more. In Imprimis every month. It is intellectual stimulation. It's also easy to understand. I mean, you know, the one great thing about conservatives is we tend not to use all the highfalutin rhetoric that the left does to mask their idiocy. We just speak in normal people language, and it's easy to understand, but also great thought-provoking ideas that make you think. It's great intellectual stimulation for your brain. It's free from Hillsdale College, part of their education mission. You go to Eric, E-R-I-C-K, ericforhillsdale.com, put in your info, get Imprimis. It comes every month to your mailbox. And you will never pay a penny for it. You can begin your relationship with Hillsdale College and Imprimis by going to ericforhillsdale.com. ericforhillsdale.com. Greetings. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425. This open line Friday. Let's take a few more phone calls here towards the end of the show. Shannon, you're going to be up next. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Eric, this is Shannon. I have called you a couple of times, and I'm just so glad I get to call and just sort of be calm about things. But you really know how to hurt a person, since I am one of those people who lives up in the corner of Georgia with Miss Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Oh, God bless you. It is God's country up there, though, isn't it? It's gorgeous.
It is beautiful. But that is probably, and I had reached out to you because I am a delegate. And what that means is I get to go to our district and our state convention, and I get to sort of be a vote amongst many on issues that the GOP brings up. But I am, like you, caught by the extreme actions that continue to divide our party instead of unite. And was curious as to if you had an audience with Mrs. Greene, what would you say to her?
What I would tell her is that the fight is not with our side, but with the Democrats, and that if a vocal minority of the GOP decides to fight, they still need to recognize they're in the minority, and perhaps instead of fighting, try to persuade. It seems like this is the, and this is my chief frustration, I think, at this point, is that there are ways to fight and win. But when you're fighting on every front, on every issue, at every time, amongst yourselves, you're not going to win. The strategy, there's got to be an overarching strategy. Instead of confusing tactics for strategy, we need a strategy. How do we advance the ball? My favorite example of this is Ted Kennedy. In 1980, when Ted Kennedy challenged Jimmy Carter in the Democratic primary for president, Ted Kennedy committed himself to universal health care in the United States and in Indian insurance companies. And Ted Kennedy, every year in Congress, nibbled away at the insurance industry. He drove up costs. He made it harder. He regulated more. He demanded more stuff. And slowly and incrementally, over time, got to Obamacare. And Ted Kennedy won because Ted Kennedy sought inches instead of seeking miles. Because he knew by taking an inch every year in Congress, he would eventually take the mile. And our side is just so impatient because we've internalized the country's going off the deep end. And I agree, the country's headed in the wrong direction. We're headed towards a fiscal cliff. But I also know that if we try to take a mile, we're not going to get an inch. But if we try to take an inch or a foot or a yard instead of a mile, we might get half a yard instead of a full yard. We might get half a foot instead of a full foot. We might get half an inch instead of an inch, but we're going to get something. And Marjorie and Matt Gaetz and some of the others, they it's all or nothing for them. And that's not the way the Congress has ever worked. And for those of you who say, well, the left keeps winning, the left keeps winning, the left keeps winning because the left has been taking inches for years, and the right has refused every opportunity given to take an inch. The last time the right was willing to take an inch was sequestration in 2013, and it was real-world cuts to government. Not cuts to the future growth of government. It was actually cuts to current government. It brought down the size and scope of the federal government. And then what happened? The right abandoned it because it wanted so much more once it got that inch. It overplayed its hand and lost sequestration altogether because it didn't want to take the second inch. It wanted to go from taking an inch to taking 5 miles. And everybody else said, no, we're done. Our side, the conservative side, is the side that understands human nature and human interest, that men are inherently bad. Now, that sounds bad to outsiders, but we know men are sinners. I am a conservative because I want as few sinners in charge of me as possible. The left believes mankind is a blank slate and everybody's naturally good and it takes perversions of the soul over time to twist them. No, we know mankind starts out as sinners, and so we should be restraining them and therefore restraining government. But then the right has lost its patience to fight. You get, what does conservatism conserve? Well, you got your Second Amendment rights, don't you? We got rid of Roe v. Wade, didn't we? Homeschool has been protected legally in this country, hasn't it? You got some big wins for conservatism, but all these people who were conservative yesterday now have decided they're populist. They don't care about principles. But when they've abandoned their principles for the here and now fight against the left, they've gotten really impatient, and they're not willing to take an incremental approach. You know, Ronald Reagan overnight was not able to change the hearts and minds of the American public on the idea of standing up to the Soviet Union as opposed to having spheres of influence. He did it incrementally over time in his presidency and was able to bring down the Soviet Union. And we've lost the patience and we've lost the willingness to trust conservative principles because so many people on the right in postmodernism, like so many people on the left in modernity, have decided the shiny and the new is better. But I got to tell you, I think they're wrong, and I can tell you exactly how I think they're wrong. And in fact, let me read for you something that I think some of you will know, something familiar so that you understand. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil in which he toils under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south, it goes to the north. Around and around goes the wind, and on its circuits the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full to the place where the streams flow. There they flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be. What has been done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. There are no new ideas. There are new tactics. There are new strategies. But we've rejected the thinking of the past for something new and shiny that's just repackaged nonsense that has failed in the past, because we've decided that the guys in the past who actually won weren't winners. George W. Bush was a winner. The right now hates him. Ronald Reagan was now a winner. The right has now moved past him. We take the people who won and the strategies they used to win and say, well, they weren't winners. Look what happened. Conservatism hasn't conserved anything. Really? Look again. You want to win? You want to advance? Stop peeing inside your own tent all the time if you're a representative. And if you want to fight the left, fight smart. My job's to hold my side accountable. Marjorie Taylor Greene's job should be to legislate. Not to be on TV, not to fundraise, but to legislate. And you legislate and you win by doing it incrementally over time. You don't go for the mile, or at least when you go for the mile, be willing to compromise for the inch. And over time, you'll be as successful as Ted Kennedy was, who was a highly successful legislator because he was always willing to advance an inch when he couldn't advance a mile. And our side gives up because, oh, we can't take a mile, so we might as well not fight. Let's fight each other for daring to take the inch. Mike, you're up next. Welcome to the show.
I just wanted to tell you that I am a huge liberal, very left of center. I listen to you because I like hearing just other points. And I want to give you a huge compliment, because I hope that a lot of people aren't listening to this, because what you're saying, I think, is going to, if people were to listen to you and to not listen to the crazy and to not buy into that and to get a leader who is a little more middle of the road, I think you guys are unstoppable. And so I just wanted to
Mike, you're hurting my street cred here.
Yeah, I really, as a huge liberal, I tell you, I hope they're not listening to you, because I think you have the absolute key to what would help the right take over in a lot of ways. And so I enjoy listening to you. We don't agree on a lot, but man, I appreciate you, and you're smart as all.
Okay.
And, thank you.
Mike, I got to ask you, do you have Netflix?
I do.
Okay. Have you seen Neil Brennan's stand-up comedy show called Blocks?
No.
Okay, all right, you need to this weekend if you can. So Neil Brennan was Dave Chappelle's co-writer and producer. Great guy and a hilarious comedian. He's actually got a new show out on Netflix, but he's got this one on called Blocks, his last one. It's very cerebral comedy, and this is a guy who is very open about his struggles with depression. But he says there's a great game you could have on for liberals. He says, you come in, if you're a conservative, you come and say, hey guys, I'm conservative. Someone cracks you a beer, says, hey buddy, welcome to the conservative movement. Somebody comes in and says, I'm a liberal. Then everybody says, we'll see. He says, this is a great game you could have. Quick, Muslim hands you a backpack at the airport. How liberal are you?
That's awesome.
You really gotta watch it. And he's like, so the guy says, he says, listen, I'm clearly a liberal. Wire glasses, pasty thin, I'm a liberal. But you gotta really, I recommend it for you. Yes. Mike, thanks very much. Have a great weekend. All right, thank you. Mike's calling it. So it's Neil Brennan. It really is. It's how liberal are you? You know, honestly though, the right is kind of moving towards that, where it's no longer enough that I'm a conservative. I don't want to grow the government. Well, how conservative are you? Are you really on our side? So there's the story in the Old Testament about the shibboleths. I used to like take for granted people knew the story, but this isn't a theological point. Just bear with me here. So the Israelites could make the sound. The Philistines, or the people in the Canaanite tribes, could not. They made the sound. So the Israelites who had come out of Egypt, who had been there for hundreds of years, could say shibboleth. And the Canaanites could only say sibboleth. So one night, they're crossing the Jordan River, they're being pursued, and I believe it's Joshua sets up men to guard the Jordan River and says that everyone who comes across the river, ask them to say the word shibboleth. And if they can say shibboleth, let them pass. And if they say it, but they say sibboleth instead, kill them immediately. And that's how they are able to weed out those who are among the Israelites and those who are not. And shibboleth becomes the words we say to identify tribal identity. And there are so many more shibboleths now on the right than there used to be. like you want to hear a great example of shibboleth. My goodness, we have been playing great examples of shibboleth all week here. Let me play you some of this. You'll recognize this.
But what about the hard things, the places where we are prone to disagreement, say politics and religion? Well, as it turns out, not only does Wikipedia's model work there, it actually works really well. Because in our normal lives, these contentious conversations tend to erupt over disagreement about what the truth actually is. But the people who write these articles, they're not focused on the truth. They're focused on something else, which is the best of what we can know right now. And after 7 years of working with these brilliant folks, I've come to believe that they are onto something, that perhaps for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start.
That's National Public Radio CEO Catherine Mayer, who trots out left-wing shibboleths all the time. Why? Because Catherine Mayer is not of the intersectional woke class of moral people. Who is Catherine Mayer? Her father worked for Goldman Sachs. She grew up in a wealthy family in Connecticut. So what Catherine Mayer has done is she's taught herself the shibboleths of progressivism to advance within progressivism. At a time progressives are demanding more non-white people in authority, Catherine Mayer, as a white person, has been able to protect herself and her privilege and rise to the upper echelons of the ranks of progressives by trotting out all the tropes and shibboleths of the left. She says folks instead of people. She spells it with an X instead of a KS. She talks about her privilege. She talks about white nationalism. She uses words like allyship. She embraces pronouns. She denounces people who fly in first class and says, unironically, she goes and sits in the back of the bus. She does all the things she's got to do to show tribally she's one of them. She uses the language of the shibboleths to avoid her own persecution from the left. Because keep in mind here, you can never be too progressive among these sorts of wokes. Goes back to the Neil Brenner thing. How liberal are you? Well, Catherine Mayer is keeping up pretenses to be the most woke of the wokes so that she, as a white, privileged woman, a daughter of a Goldman Sachs banker, can run NPR and claim to be an allyship with the intersectional classes that are shut out of upper echelons of society. It's all about using the right shibboleths. And sadly, too many people, too often now on the right, are using those shibboleths to try to advance themselves. And in the process of doing so, they're losing the ability to communicate with the middle class who aren't hyper zealots online. And we're losing the game and the language to be able to persuade the middle class because we've given up on trying to persuade. At this point, all we're doing is we're yelling to our crowd, telling them what they want to hear, throwing chum in the water, getting the seals to clap. In the meantime, we're dropping the ball on persuading the voters we need to win. I want to persuade you to go to Vision Computers today. If you're buying a computer, building a computer, Vision Computers can not only build you a cutting-edge, top-of-the-line computer, they can save you money in doing so. Instead of going to the one-size-fits-all big-box store or going to one of those online sites, you don't know what the GPU is, how much RAM do I need, anything like that. You go to Vision, they can save you some money, they can answer your questions, they can tell you what you actually need, what you actually want, they can spec it out based on your demands, and then they can be your tech support. It comes with a computer. You buy a computer from Vision Computers, then you get the phone number, and 15 seconds or less, you get your answer to how to use your computer. You got a question about it. You need email support, printer support. You call them at 404-COMPUTE or go to visioncomputers.com. But now here's the thing. Let's say you did go buy the one-size-fits-all computer and you got trouble with it and you don't know who to call. You don't have no nerds around to answer your question. For a low annual fee, Vision can become your tech support even though you didn't buy the computer from them. And if you're a business, it's $179 a year, not a month. And your employees get the phone number and they can call Vision and say, hey, I can't figure out how to do something on my computer. Faster than a Google search, Vision Computer can answer their question so that they can be a productive employee instead of worrying about their computer. 404-COMPUTE, 404-COMPUTE, or visioncomputers.com. If you call them at 404-COMPUTE and you tell them, sent you, you're going to save even more money. We're continuing to watch this breaking news situation where the individual in, outside the courtroom in New York, he set himself on fire. People are beginning to speculate on his identity. So I'm not going to give you that stuff because it's not yet confirmed, and I don't want to trot out a bunch of stuff that may not be true. What we do know for certain is a man set himself on fire in New York City behind CNN's cameras, so he would be caught live and self-immolated. We are continuing to watch this development. In other big news, it is now confirmed the House is tying its TikTok legislation to the Ukraine-Israel funding, and Senate Democrats have said they will accept the change. The Mike Johnson-backed legislation says that TikTok, instead of having to be sold within 6 months, will have to be sold within 9 months with a possible three-month extension to make it a full year. Maria Cantwell, the Democrat in charge of the Senate Commerce Committee overseeing this, said she would accept a change given the complications of transfer and negotiations for a seller for TikTok U.S., but it appears the House will tie the TikTok sale legislation to the Ukraine-Israel funding in a way that the Senate will not be able to strip it out, and the Senate Democrats are saying they will accept that, so TikTok, within the next week, we'll have to find a new buyer. Elon Musk has now come out and said, I think it's wrong to force TikTok to shut down in the United States. That's not what's happening here, and anyone who says so is carrying the Communist Party line. But then Elon Musk typically carries the Chinese Communist Party line because he has so much business in China. He's very, very sympathetic to the Chinese communists. That's not actually what's happening. What the legislation says is that TikTok must find a new owner or TikTok must shut down. It's the Chinese communists' decision. That vote will come this weekend in the House of Representatives. It is expected to pass on a bipartisan basis along with funding Ukraine and Israel. You guys have a great weekend. I'll be back home next week. Have a great time. Stay safe out there.